The desert rested quietly beneath an invisible thing in the sky. Just a few minutes ago, Dan Brooks had watched himself die out there, or maybe escape in the nick of time. Something like him, anyway. Right up until that last moment when the maelstrom had chewed it up and spat it out. And right at that moment, the zombies had come unglued. Acid, Slippers had said then. At least, that's what Brooks had heard. Acid. As-hub? A.S., he said aloud. Brother Slippers turned, raised an eyebrow. A.S., Brooks repeated. What's it stand for?
Artificial stupidity. Grabs local surveillance archives to blend in. Chameleon response.
But why me? Why? In the sky. Invisible airships.
Why anything? Why not just cloak, like that thing up there?
Can't cloak thermal emissions without overheating, Slippers told him. Not for long, at least. Not if you're an endotherm. Best you can do is make yourself look like something else. Dynamic mimicry.
Dymic. Brooks snorted, shook his head. You're not even bicameral, are you? Slippers smiled faintly.
You thought I was?
It's a monastery. You spoke like... Slippers shook his head.
Just visiting.
Acronyms. You're military, Brooks guessed.
Something like that.
Dan Brooks, he said, extending a hand. The other man looked at it for a moment, reached out his own.
Jim Moore, welcome to the armistice.
What just happened?
They came to terms, for the moment.
They?
The monks and the vampire.
I thought those were zombies.
Those are.
Moore tapped the wall. A heat source appeared in the distance. A lone bright pinprick, well behind the line.
That isn't. Zombies don't do anything without someone pulling their strings. She's coming in now.
Vampires, Brooks said.
Vampire. Solitary op.
And then, almost as an afterthought,
those things aren't good in groups.
I didn't even know we let them out. I actually thought we were pretty scrupulous about keeping them, you know, contained.
So did I.
Pale, flickering light washed the color from Moore's face.
Not quite sure what her story is.
What's she have against the bicamerals?
I don't know.
Why did she stop?
Enemy of my enemy.
Brooks let that sink in. You're saying there's a bigger enemy out there? A common threat?
Potentially.
Out in the desert, that dimensionless point of heat had grown large enough to move on visible legs. It did not appear to be running, yet somehow crossed the desert far faster than any baseline was likely to walk. So I guess I can go now, Brooks said. The old soldier turned to face him, regret mingled with the tactical reflections in his eyes.
Not a chance, he said.
Either war is obsolete, or men are. R. Buckminster Fuller. Two guards stood at the door halfway down the hall, one to each side, like a couple of dark golems in matching pajamas. Brooks had not been invited to the party inside, but he followed Moore at a distance, hanging back along the edge of the corridor for want of any other destination. Bicamerals brushed past in both directions, going about whatever business involved the domestication of weaponized whirlwinds. They seemed unremarkable in the morning light slanting through the windows. No arcane ululations. No vestments or hooded robes. No uniforms of any kind that Brooks could make out. A couple wore denim. One, preoccupied with a tack pad as he passed, was stark naked, except for the tattoo squirming along his chest. Some kind of winged animal, Brooks was pretty sure it didn't exist anywhere in the taxonomic database. They still had stars in their eyes, though. Ahead, Moore stepped between the guards and into the room.
Brooks sidled up in his wake. The sentries stood still as stone, barefoot, faces forward, their beige coveralls identically featureless. Empty holsters hung from their belts. Their lightless eyes wouldn't stop moving. They jiggled and jerked in panicked little arcs, back and forth, up and down, as though terrified souls had been buried alive in wet cement. Someone coughed softly down the hall. All four eyes locked on that sound for the merest instant, froze in synchronized quadroscopic far focus, then broke and resumed struggling in their sockets. There was a market niche for zombies, Brooks had read, among those who still took their sex in the first person. He tried to imagine fucking any creature possessed of such eyes, and shuddered. He passed by on the far side of the hall. Parallax served up a moving slice of the room behind the door. Jim Moore, a tabletop holo display in standby mode, a handful of bicamerals nodding among themselves. A woman, lean as a greyhound beneath a mimetic body stocking, a bone-pale face under a spiky shock of short black hair, jawline just a bit more prognathous than any card-carrying prey might feel comfortable with. She turned her head as Brooks crept by. Her eyes flashed like a cat's. She bared her teeth. On anyone else, it would have been a smile. The door swung shut.
Hey, hungry?
He jumped at the hand on his arm, but it was only a woman, dreadlocked and gracile, and with a smile that warmed his skin instead of freezing it. Her skin was uniform chocolate, not the rainbow swirl of false color it had been the night before. But he recognized the voice.
Liana, he grunted, taking her in. You're the first person I've seen here who's actually dressed like a monk.
It's a bathrobe. We're not really into gang colors around here.
She jerked her chin down the hall.
Come on, breakfast.
They selected their meals from a commons that looked reassuringly like a conventional cafeteria bar. Cloned bacon, Brooks was relieved to see. He'd been afraid the bicamerals would be vegan traditionalists. But they ate sitting on the sprawling steps of the main entrance, watching the morning shadows shorten by degrees across the desert. The quiet hiss of an idling tornado drifted over the ramparts behind them. That was quite the night, Brooks said around a mouthful of egg.
Quite the morning, too.
He raised his eyes. Far overhead, the contrail of some passing Airbus etched a line across the sky.
Oh, it's still up there, Liana remarked. Kind of flickers in and out of the higher wavelengths if you stare hard enough.
I can't see it.
What kind of augments you got?
For my eyes? Nothing. Brooks dropped his gaze back to the horizon. Got wired with cryptochrome back when it was the next big thing. Thought it would help me find my way around down in Costa Rica. You know the ads? Never be lost again? Except suddenly I wasn't just seeing Earth's magnetic field. I was seeing a halo around every bloody tack pad and charge mat. It was distracting as hell. Liana nodded.
Well, it takes some getting used to. Give sight to the blind. Takes time to learn how to see.
More than I had the patience for. Pigment's still sitting back there in my retina, but I got it blocked after about a week.
Wow, you're old school.
He fought back a twitch of irritation.
Half my age, and she's probably already forgotten the difference between the meat she was born with and the chrome that came after.
I've got the usual brain boosts. Can't very well get tenure otherwise.
Which reminds me.
I don't suppose there's any cognitol on the premises. I left mine back at camp. Liana's eyes widened.
You take pills?
It's the same.
It'd take about 10 minutes to fit you with a pump, and you take pills.
Her face split into a big, goofy grin.
That's not old school. That's downright paleolithic.
Glad you find it so fucking amusing, Liana.
You have the pills or not?
Not, she pursed her lips. I guess we could synthesize some.
I'll ask.
Or you might ask Jim. He's, well,
old school, Brooks finished.
Actually, you'd be surprised how much wiring he's got in his head.
I'm surprised to even find him here. Military man in a monastery?
Yeah, well, you were expecting us all to wear bathrobes.
He's here to help you in your war against the vamps? Brooks set his empty plate beside him on the step. She shook her head.
He's here to... He just needed a place to work through some stuff. Also, I think he's kind of spying on us.
She cocked her head at him.
What about you?
I got herded, he reminded her.
No, I mean, what were you even doing out in the field? There any species even left out there that haven't been ramrodded and digitized?
The extinct ones, Brooks said shortly. Then relenting, sure, you can virtualize anything in the lab. Still doesn't tell you what it's doing out in the wide, wet world with a million unpredictable variables working on it. She looked out across the flats. Brooks followed her gaze. There, just off to the northwest, the ridge upon which his own home had crouched low these past 2 months. He could not see it from here.
You gonna tell me what's going on? He said at last. You got caught in the crossfire.
What crossfire? Why were the zombies...
The vampire, Liana said. Valerie, actually.
You're kidding. She shrugged. So Valerie the vampire summons her zombie forces against the bicamerals, and now they're all sitting together just down the hall, munching chips and cocktail weenies because... Moore said something about a common enemy.
It's complicated.
Try me.
You wouldn't understand.
She tried for a smile.
You're behind on your cognitol.
But it fell flat. Look, I'm sorry I crashed your party, but...
Dan, the truth is I don't really know a whole lot more than you do at this point.
She spread her hands.
All I can tell you for sure is, well, you gotta trust them. They know what they're doing.
She stopped just short of patting him on the head. He stood. Glad to hear it. Then I guess I'll leave you to your games, and thanks for the meal. She looked up at him.
You know that can't happen. Jim already told you that much.
Are you going to tell me where my bike is, or do I have to walk?
You can't leave, Dan.
You can't keep me prisoner.
It's not us you have to worry about.
Who's us this time? Bicamerals? Vampires? Koalas? She pointed north across the desert, squinting.
Look out there, on that ridge.
He did. He saw nothing at first. Then, briefly, something glinted in the morning sun. A spark on the escarpment.
Now look up, she said.
A distant shard of brightness stabbed his eye from high to the east, a reflection of sunlight off empty sky.
Not us, Liana repeated. You.
Me?
People like you. Baselines.
He let it sink in.
Valerie must have hacked a fair number of sats just getting her pieces into position. As far as anything in orbit could tell, this whole chunk of desert just dropped out of existence for a good 4 hours last night. That got people's attention. Someone probably slipped a drone or two under the ceiling in time to see our engine going through its paces. And those dance steps are, shall we say, a bit beyond what passes for state-of-the-art out there,
Liana sighed.
The bicamerals have been spooking the wrong people for years now. Too many breakthroughs, too fast, the usual. They've been watching. All this time they've been watching. And now, as far as they can tell, we're in some kind of gang war with a bunch of zombies. They are not going to let this pass, Dan. Now that they've caught a glimpse behind the curtain,
They'll have thrown a net over the whole reserve.
And I, Brooks reflected, don't blame them one goddamned bit. I'm not part of this. You said it yourself.
You're a witness. They'll debrief you.
So they'll debrief me. Brooks shrugged. You haven't told me anything.
I haven't seen anything they haven't, if they deployed drones.
You've seen more than you realize. Everyone does, and they will know that, so your debriefing will be aggressive.
So that makes you what? My personal guard? Here to feed me and walk me and make sure I don't wander off into any of the rooms where the grown-ups are talking? And yank on my leash if I try to leave? That about sum it up?
Dan, look, you're giving me a choice between a vampire with her zombie army and you baselines, as you so delicately put it.
She got to her feet.
I'm not giving you a choice.
I have to leave sometime. I can't spend the rest of my life here.
If you try to leave now, she said, that's exactly what you'll have done.
He looked down at her, thin as a pussy willow. She only came up to his chest.
You going to stop me?
She looked back without blinking. I'm gonna try, if I have to. But I really hope it doesn't come to that.
He stood there for the longest time. Then he picked up his plate.
Fuck you,
he said, and went back inside. Within his prison, she gave him all the space in the world. She backed right off as he stalked down the hall, past the murmuring of the devout and the hyperkinetic gaze of the frozen zombies, past the closed-door deliberations of enemies of enemies, and the open doors of dorms and studies and bathrooms. He moved without direction at first, following any corridor that presented itself, backtracking from every cul-de-sac, his feet exploring autonomously while his gut churned. After a while, some dull, sullen pain behind his eyes brought him back to the here and now. He took more conscious note of his surroundings and decided to revisit Moore's basement watchtower, as much for its relative familiarity as for any tactical insights he might glean. He couldn't find it. He remembered Liana leading him through a hole in the wall. He remembered emerging from it after the armistice. It had to be off the main corridor, had to lie behind one of these identical oaken doors that lined the hall. But no perspective along that length seemed familiar. It was as though he was in some off-kilter mock-up of the place he'd been just an hour before, as though the layout of the monastery had changed subtly when he wasn't looking. He started trying doors at random. The third was ajar. Low voices murmured behind it. It swung inward easily. Flat panels of vat-cloned hardwood lined the space beyond, a kind of library or map room that looked out onto a grassy compound, half sunlit, half in shadow, past the opposite end of the room. Past sliding glass doorways, arcane objects rose haphazardly from that immaculate lawn. Brooks couldn't tell whether they were machines or sculptures or some half-assed hybrid of the two. The only thing that looked at all familiar out there was a shallow wash basin set atop a boxy, waist-high pedestal. There was another one of those inside, too, just past a conference table that dominated the center of the room itself. Two mismatched bicamerals stood at the table's edge, gazing at a collection of dice-size objects scattered across some kind of hard-copy map or antique game board. The Japanese monk was gaunt as a scarecrow. The Caucasian could have passed for Santa Claus at the departmental Christmas party, given the bright threads and a pillow stuffed down his front.
"From Queensland, maybe," Santa remarked. "That place always bred the best neurotoxins."
The scarecrow scooped up a handful of objects. Not dice, Brooks saw now. A collection of multifaceted lumps that made him think of mahogany macrame, and arranged them in a rough crescent across the board. Santa considered.
Still not enough. Even if we could sift the Van Allens dry on short notice.
He absently scratched the side of his neck. Seemed to notice Brooks at last.
You're the refugee.
Biologist.
Welcome anyway, Santa smacked his lips. I'm Luckett.
Dan Brooks. He took the other man's nod for an invitation and stepped closer to the table. The pattern decorating the game board, a multicolored spiral of interlocking Penrose tiles, was far more complex than any he remembered from his grandfather's attic. It seemed to move at the corner of his eye, to crawl just so when he wasn't quite looking. The scarecrow clicked his tongue, eyes never leaving the table.
Don't mind Massa so, Luckett remarked. He's not much for what you'd call normal conversation.
Does everyone around here speak in tongues?
Speak? Oh, I see what you mean, Luckett laughed softly. No, with Massa so here, it's more like a kind of aphasia, when he's not linked in, anyway.
The scarecrow spilled a few more mahogany knuckles with chaotic precision. Luckett laughed again, shook his head. He talks through board games, Brooks surmised.
Close enough. Who knows? I might be doing the same thing by the time I graduate.
You're not. Of course he wasn't. His eyes didn't sparkle.
Not yet, acolyte.
It was enough that he spoke English. I'm trying to find the room I was in last night. Basement, spiral stairs, kind of a war room bunker feel to it.
Ah, the colonel's lair. North hall, first right, second door on the left.
Okay, thanks.
Not at all.
Luckett turned away as Masaso clicked and rolled the bones.
More than enough antimatter to break orbit, anyway. Least it saves on chemical mass.
Brooks stopped, hand on the doorknob. What was that? Luckett glanced back at him.
Just drawing up plans. Nothing to worry about.
You guys have antimatter?
Before long,
Luckett grinned and dipped his hands into the wash basin.
God willing.
Most of the tactical collage was dark or writhing with analog static. A half dozen windows flickered fitfully through random points of view. Desert, desert, desert. No SATCAM imagery. Either Moore had shut down those feeds, or whoever was behind the blockade had walled off the sky as well as the horizon. Brooks tapped experimentally on an unlit patch of paint. His touch provoked a brief flicker of red, but nothing else. The active windows kept changing, though. Some kind of motion sensor built into the feed, maybe. Views would pan and pounce, flash zooming on this flickering shadow or that distant escarpment. Sometimes Brooks couldn't see anything noteworthy at the center of attention. A falcon grooming itself on a skeletal branch, or the burrow of a desert rodent halfway to the horizon. Once or twice, a little fall of rock skittering down a distant slope, scree dislodged by some unseen disturbance. Once, partially eclipsed by leaves and scrub, a pair of glassy reflections looking back.
Help you.
Jim Moore reached past Brooks's shoulder and tapped the display. A new window sprang to life at his fingertip. Brooks stepped aside while the soldier stretched the window across the paint, called up a feed, zoomed on a crevice, splitting a hillock to the south.
I was trying to get online, Brooks admitted. See if anyone out there's picked up on this whole quarantine thing.
Net's strictly local. I don't think the bicamerals actually have quinternet access.
What? They're afraid of getting hacked?
It was an ongoing trend, Brooks had heard. Defensive self-partitioning in the face of present shock, and damn the legal consequences. People were starting to weigh costs against benefits, opt for a day or two outside the panopticon, even in the face of the inevitable fines and detentions. But Moore was shaking his head.
I don't think they need it, Do you feel especially lost without access to the telegraph network?
What's a telegraph?
Exactly.
Something caught the colonel's eye.
Huh. That's not good.
Brooks followed the other man's gaze to the window he'd opened, to the crevice centered there. I don't see anything. Moore played a little arpeggio on the wall. The image blossomed into false color. Something glowed Euclidean yellow in all that fractal blue. He grunted.
Aerosol delivery, looks like.
Your guys? The corner of Moore's mouth curled the slightest bit.
Can't really say.
What's to say? You're a soldier, right? They're soldiers, unless the government's started subcontracting to...
Biothermals, too. They're not trusting their bots to run things.
There was a hint of amusement in the old soldier's voice.
Probably baselines, then.
Why is that?
Fragile egos. Low self-esteem.
His fingers skipped across the darkened wall. Bright windows flared everywhere they touched. At least you're all on the same side then, right?
Doesn't really work like that.
What's that supposed to mean?
The chain of command isn't what it used to be.
Moore smiled faintly.
It's more organic these days. Anyway.
Another finger dance. The window dwindled and slid to an empty spot along the edge of the wall.
They're still setting up. We've got time.
How is the meeting? Brooks asked.
Still going on. Not much point hanging around after the opening ceremonies, though. I'd just slow them down.
And let me guess, you can't tell me what's going on, and it's none of my business anyway.
Why would you say that?
Liana said,
Dr. Luterote wasn't at the meeting,
Moore reminded him. Okay, so is there anything you can...
The Fireflies,
Moore said. Brooks blinked. What about... Oh, your common enemy, Moore nodded. Memories of intercepted negotiations scrolling past in Christmas colors. Theseus, they found something out there?
Maybe. Nothing certain yet. Just hints and inferences. No solid intel.
Still. An alien agency capable of simultaneously dropping 60,000 surveillance probes into the atmosphere without warning. An agency that came and went in seconds. That caught the planet with its pants down. And took God knew how many compromising pictures along God knew how many wavelengths before letting the atmosphere burn its own paparazzi down to a sprinkle of untraceable iron floating through the stratosphere. An agency never seen before, and never since, for all the effort put into finding it. I guess that qualifies as a common threat, Brooks admitted.
I guess it does.
Moore turned back to his war wall. Why were they fighting in the first place? What does a vampire have against a bunch of monks? Moore didn't answer for a moment. Then,
it's not personal, if that's what you're thinking.
What then? Moore took a breath.
It's more of the same, really. Entropy increasing. The realists and their war on heaven. The nanohistamites over in Hokkaido. Islamabad on fire.
Brooks blinked. Islamabad's...
Oops. Getting ahead of myself. Give it time.
The colonel shrugged.
I'm not trying to be coy, Dr. Brooks. You're already in the soup, so I'll tell you what I can, so long as it doesn't endanger you further. But you're going to have to take a lot on... Well, on faith.
Brooks stifled the laugh. Moore looked at him. Sorry, Brooks said. It's just, you hear so much about the bicamerals and their scientific breakthroughs and their quest for truth, and I finally get inside this grand edifice, and all I hear is trust and God willing and take it on faith. I mean, the whole order's supposed to be founded on the search for knowledge, and rule number one is don't ask questions.
It's not that they don't have answers,
Moore said after a moment.
It's just that we can't understand them for the most part. You could resort to analogies, I suppose, force transhuman insights into human cookie-cutter shapes, but most of the time, that would just get you a bleeding metaphor with all its bones broken.
He held up a hand, warding off Brooks's rejoinder.
I know, I know. It can be frustrating as hell. But people have an unfortunate habit of assuming they understand the reality just because they understood the analogy. You dumb down brain surgery enough for a preschooler to think he understands it, the little tyke's liable to grab a microwave scalpel and start cutting when no one's looking.
And yet, Brooks glanced at the wall, where aerosol delivery glowed in shades of yellow and orange, where a murderous tornado had rampaged the night before. They seemed to solve their conflicts pretty much the same way as us retarded old baselines. Moore smiled faintly.
That they do.
He found Liana back on the front steps, supper balanced on her knees, watching the sun go down. She looked back over her shoulder as he pushed through the door.
I asked about your brain boosters, she said. No luck. The assembly line's booked or something.
Thanks for trying, he said.
Jim might still be holding, if you haven't asked him already.
He shifted his tray to one hand, used the other to rub away the vague pain behind his eyes. Mind if I join you? She spared one hand to take in the staircase, as broad and excessive as a cathedral's. He sat beside her, picked at his own plate. About this morning, She stared at the horizon. The sun stared back, highlighting her cheekbones.
Sorry, he finished. Forget it. Nobody likes being in a cage.
Still, I shouldn't have shot the messenger. A sudden chilly breeze crawled across his shoulders. Liana shrugged.
You ask me. Nobody should shoot anybody.
He raised his eyes. Venus twinkled back at them. He wondered briefly if those photons had followed a straight line to his eyes, or if they'd been shunted around some invisible spillway of curves and angles at the last nanosecond. He looked around at the cracked desert floor, lifted his gaze to the more jagged topography in the distance, wondered how many unseen agents were looking back.
You always eat out here? When I can.
The lowering sun stretched her shadow along the ramparts behind them, a giantess, silhouetted in orange.
It's stark, you know?
Ribbed clouds, a million shades of salmon scudding against an orange and purple sky.
How long does this go on? He wondered. This?
They lurk out there, we wait in here. When does somebody actually make a move?
Old school, you gotta relax.
She shook her head, smiled a twilight smile.
You could obsess and second guess for a solid month, and I guarantee you wouldn't be able to think of anything our hosts haven't already factored 5 ways to Sunday. They've been making moves all day.
Such as?
Don't ask me, she shrugged. I probably wouldn't understand even if they told me. They're wired up way differently.
Hive mind, he reminded himself. Synesthetes, too, if he wasn't mistaken.
You do understand them, though, he said. That's your job. Not the way you think, and not without a fair bit of modding on my own.
How, then?
I'm not sure, she admitted.
Come on.
No, really. It's a kind of Zen thing. Like playing the piano or being a centipede in heaven. The moment you start to think about what you're doing, you screw up. You just have to get into the zone.
They must have trained you at some point, Brooks insisted. There must have been some kind of conscious learning curve.
You'd think so, wouldn't you?
She squinted up at some invisible behemoth he still couldn't see.
But they kind of bypassed that. Zapped my fornix with just the right burst of ultrasound and Next thing I know, it's 4 days later, and I have all these reflexes. Not so much that I understand them as my fingers do, you know? Phonemes, rhythms, gestures, eye movements sometimes, she frowned. I take in all these cues and equations just come to me, piece by piece. I copy them down, and I send them off. And the next day they show up in the latest issue of Science.
You never examined these reflexes afterward? Played the piano really slowly, taking the time to watch what your fingers were doing?
Dan, they won't fit. Consciousness is a scratch pad. You can store a grocery list, jot down a couple of phone numbers, but were you even aware of finishing your supper?
Brooks looked down at his plate. It was empty.
And that's just a couple swallows half a minute in the past. You ever try holding, say, even a single chapter of a novel in your head? Consciously? All at once?
Her dreads swept back and forth in the gloom.
Whatever I'm doing, it's got too many variables. Won't fit in the global workspace.
She flashed him a small, apologetic smile.
They program us like clockwork dolls, he thought.
Way off to the west, the sun touched gently down on a distant ridge. He looked at her.
Why are we still in charge?
She grinned.
Who's we, white boy?
He didn't.
These people you work for, they're supposed to be helpless. That's what everyone says.
You can optimize a brain for down there or up here, not both. Anyone comfortable thinking at Planck scales, they can barely cross the street unassisted up in the real world. That's why they set up in the desert. That's why they have people like you. That's what they tell us.
All true, more or less, Liana said.
He shook his head.
They micromanage tornadoes, Lee. They turn people into puppets with a wink and a wave. They own half the patent office. They're about as helpless as a T-Rex in a daycare center. So why haven't they been running things for years? That's like a chimp asking why those hairless apes aren't slinging bigger feces than everyone else if they're so damned clever.
He tried not to smile, and failed.
That's not really an answer. Sure it is. Everybody goes on about hive mind this and synesthesia that, like they were some kind of superpowers.
After last night, you're going to tell me they're not?
It goes so much deeper than that. It's perceptual. We're so impoverished, you know? We don't look out at reality at all. We look in at this model, this caricature our brains cobbled together out of wavelengths and pressure points. We squint down over handwritten notes that say, two blocks east, turn left at the bridge, and we think that reading those stupid scribbles is the same as seeing the universe passing by on the other side of the windshield.
She glanced over her shoulder to the edifice at their backs. Brooks frowned. You think bicamerals can see outside the windshield?
Dunno. Maybe.
Then I've got some bad news for you. Reality went out the window the moment we started mediating sensory input through a nervous system. You want to actually perceive the universe directly, without any stupid scribbles or model building? Become a protozoan. A smile lit her face, startlingly bright in the deepening gloom.
Wouldn't that be just like them? Build a group mind complex enough to put any 100 baseline geniuses to shame, and use it to think like a paramecium.
That wasn't exactly my point, he said. The sun winked goodbye and slid below the horizon.
I don't know how they do it, she admitted, but if what they see is even closer to reality, well, that's what you call transcendence, not the ability to micromanage tornadoes, just seeing a little more of what's out there.
She tapped her temple,
instead of what's in here.
She stood, stretched like a cat. Brooks rose beside her and brushed the desert from his clothes. Then transcendence is out of reach, for our brains anyway.
Liana shrugged.
Change your brain.
Then it's not your brain anymore. It's something else. You're something else.
That's kind of the point. Transcendence is transformation.
He shook his head, unconvinced. Sounds more like suicide to me. He felt his eyes start up under closed lids, stepped out onto that razor-thin line between dream time and the waking edge. Just enough awareness to see the curtain, not enough to notice the man behind. Lucid dreaming was a delicate exercise. He sat up on the pallet, phantom legs still wearing corporeal ones like the abdomen of some half-molted insect. He looked around at furnishings that would have been Spartan to anyone who hadn't just spent 2 months sleeping on the desert floor. A raised sleeping pallet a couple of meters long, dipped in some softer, thicker variant of the fleshy synthetic lining the floors. An alcove in the wall, a medicine cabinet fronted with frosted glass. Another one of those wash basin pedestals, this one with a towel bar bolted to the side facing the bed, a hand towel draped over it. The cubby Luckett had tucked him into for the night, all pretty much the way it looked when he was awake. He'd learned to launch his dreams from a platform anchored in reality. It made the return trip easier. Brooks flexed his temporoparietal and descended through a ceiling of polished granite. That was surmise. He'd forgotten to take note of its composition in the waking world. The monastery spread out around, then below him, dwindled from a life-size fortress to a tabletop model on a cracked gray moonscape. A fingernail moon shone bone-white overhead. Everywhere else, a million stars glinted hard as ice crystals against the darkness. He flew north. It was minimalist magic. No rainbow bridges or talking clouds. No squadrons of aircraft piloted by tyrannosaurs. He'd long since learned not to strain the credulity of whatever mental processes indulged his presence here. Critics that had lived in his head since before his dreams had even been lucid. Some inner skeptic frowned at the thought of a space-faring bicycle, and dreaming 8-year-old Danny Brooks found himself stranded between the stars. Some forebrain killjoy snorted at the giddy delight of flying, and suddenly he was entangled in high-tension wires, or simply ejected back into consciousness at 3 in the morning, spat out of sleep by his own incredulity. Even in dreams, his brain had been selling him out since before he'd had hair on his crotch. As an adult, he'd had no use for them until his limited baseline learning curve had run out of waking hours, forced him to learn new techniques in his sleep, lest academia's new and improving generation devoured him from behind. He could fly now, at least, without thought or self-subversion. He'd learned that much through years of practice. Through the induction hardware that had once guided his visions when REM started up. Through the exercises that eventually let him ditch those training wheels and do it all in his own head. He could fly, into orbit and beyond and back if he wanted to. He could fly all the way to heaven. That was where he was going now. The northern lights swirled in the sky directly ahead. A blue-green curtain shimmering above his destination. Like a star of Bethlehem for the holographic age. But no talking clouds. He'd also learned not to push it. Now, ghost-like, he passed through heaven's fortifications and descended into its deepest levels. Ro languished there, as she always did, alone in her cell, still wearing the paper smock and slippers she'd worn in departures when they'd told each other it wasn't goodbye. A cuff around her left ankle and a dozen links of corroded chain shackled her to the wall. Hair hung across her downcast face like a dark curtain. Her face lit up, though, as he descended through the ceiling. He settled beside her on the stone floor. "I'm sorry. I would have come sooner. I just..." He stopped. No point in wasting precious REM with dreamed apologies. He tweaked the script, started again. "You wouldn't believe what's happening," he said.
"Tell me."
"I've got caught up in some kind of war. I'm trapped behind enemy lines with a bunch of... Really, you wouldn't believe me.
Monks and zombies, she said. And a vampire.
Of course she knew. I don't even know how I can be here. You'd think with all this stuff happening, I'd be too wired to even sit down, but...
You've been going straight for 24 hours.
She laid her hand on his.
Of course you're going to crash.
These people don't, he grumbled. I don't think they even sleep. Not all at once, anyway. Different parts of their brains take shifts or something, like a bunch of dolphins.
You're not a dolphin, and you're not some augmented wannabe either. You're natural, just the way I like it. And you know what?
What?
You're going to keep up with them. You always do.
Not always, he thought. You should come back, he said suddenly. Somewhere far away, his fingers and toes tingled faintly. She shook her head.
We've been over this.
Nobody's saying you have to go back to the job. There are a million other options.
In here, she told him, there are a billion.
He looked at her chain. He had never consciously forged those links. He'd simply found her like this. He could have changed her circumstance with a thought, of course, as he could change anything in this world. But there were always risks. He'd learned not to push it. You can't like it here, he said quietly. She laughed.
Why not? I didn't put that thing on.
But, his temples throbbed. He willed them to stop.
Dan, she said gently. You can keep up out there. I can't.
The tingling intensified in his extremities. Rose's face wavered before him, fading to black. He couldn't keep her together much longer. All this careful conservatism, these shackled environments that barely edged beyond the laws of physics. They only guarded against the inner heckler, not these unwelcome sensations intruding from outside. Headaches, pins and needles. They distracted from his own contrivance. Suddenly, the whole facade was falling apart around him.
Come back soon, his wife called through the rising static. I'll be waiting.
She was gone before he could answer. He tried to construct something spectacular, the implosion of heaven itself, a fiery inward collapse toward some ravenous singularity deep below the Canadian shield. But he was rising too fast toward the light. There'd been a time when he'd derided his own lack of imagination, cursed his inability to slip his shackles and just dream like everyone else, with glorious hallucinogenic abandon. Even now, sometimes, he had to remind himself. It wasn't a failing at all. It was a strength. Even in sleep, Dan Brooks didn't take anything on faith. To himself, everyone is immortal. He may know that he is going to die, but he can never know that he is dead. Samuel Butler. Sunshine stabbed his eyes through the cell's slotted window. His mouth was dry, his head a throb. His fingers pulsed with dull electricity. Slept on my hands, he thought, and tried to imagine how he might have actually done that as he swung his legs over the edge of the bed. The same pins and needles flooded the soles of his feet when he planted them on the floor. Great. He found his way to the lab that Luckett had shown him the night before, emptied his bladder while every extremity tingled and burned. The discomfort was beginning to fade by the time he flushed. He headed off down the empty hall in search of other warm bodies, only slightly unsteady on his feet. Something thumped behind one of the closed doors. He paused for a moment before continuing, his attention drawn by another door opening farther down the hall. By the naked blotchy thing that fell into view, choking and twitching as if electrocuted. He stood there for a moment, shocked into paralysis. Then he was moving again. his own trivial discomfort forgotten in a greater shock of recognition. Masaso, the scarecrow, back arched, teeth bared, flesh stretched so tight across cheekbones that it was a wonder his face hadn't split down the middle. Brooks was almost at the man's side before realization stopped him in his tracks. Every muscle thrown into tetany. This was some kind of motor disorder. This was neurological. The pins and needles were back in full force. Brooks looked down in disbelief at his own fingertips. Try as he might, he couldn't stop them from trembling. When the screaming started, he barely heard it. Whatever it was, it killed quietly, for the most part. Not because it was painless. Its victims staggered from hiding and thrashed on the floors, faces twisted into agonized devil masks. Even the dead kept them on, veins bulging, eyes splattered crimson with pinpoint embolisms, each face frozen in the same calcified rictus. Not a word, not a groan from any of them. There was nothing he could do but step over the bodies as he tracked that lone voice screaming somewhere ahead. Nothing he could feel but that terrifying electricity growing in his fingers and toes. Nothing he could think but, "It's in me too, it's in me too, it's in me too." Creatures in formation rounded the corner ahead of him. Four human bodies moving in perfect step, more live than the bodies on the floor, just as dead inside. Valerie kept pace in their midst. Four sets of jiggling eyes locked onto Brooks for an instant, then resumed their frantic omnidirectional dance. Valerie didn't even look in his direction. She moved as if spring-loaded, as if her joints were subtly out of place. One of her zombies was missing below the knees. The carbon prosthetics it used for legs squeaked softly against the floor as they approached. Apart from that subtle friction, Brooks couldn't hear so much as a footfall from any of them. He flattened instinctively against the wall, praying to some Pleistocene god for invisibility, or at least for insignificance. Valerie swept abreast of him, eyes straight ahead. Brooks squeezed his eyes shut. Soft screams filled the darkness. He felt a small, distant pride that none of them came from him. When he opened his eyes again, the monster was gone. The screaming had grown fainter, more intimate. Some horrific lighthouse beacon running low on batteries, calling through the fog of war. Except this was no fucking war. This was a massacre. This was one tribe of giants slaughtering another, and any baseline fossil stupid enough to get caught underfoot didn't even rate the brutal mercy of a slashed throat on the battlefield. Welcome to the armistice. He followed the sound. He doubted there was anything he could do. Euthanasia, perhaps. But if it could scream, maybe it could talk. Maybe it could tell him something. It already had, in a way. It had told him that all victims were not equal in the eyes of this pestilence. All the bicamerals he'd seen so far seemed to have fallen within minutes of each other, seized by the throat, and turned to tortured stone before they'd even had a chance to cry out. Not everyone, though. Not the vampire and her minions. Not the screamer. Not Dan Brooks. Not yet. But he was infected. Oh, yes, he was. Something was at work on his distal circuitry, shorting out his fine motor control, working its way up the main cables. Maybe the screamer was just a little farther along. Maybe the screamer was Daniel Brooks in another 10 minutes. Maybe it was right here, behind this door. Brooks pushed it open. Luckett. He squirmed like a hooked eel pout in a cell identical to the one where Brooks had slept, slid around on a floor slippery with his own fluids. Sweat turned his tunic into a soaked dish rag, ran in torrents from his face and limbs. Darker stains spread from his crotch. The hook hadn't caught him by the mouth, though. It sprouted from a port at the back of his neck, a shivering fiber running to a socket low on the wall. Luckett convulsed. His head struck the edge of an overturned chair. The blow seemed to bring him back a little. The screaming stopped. The eyes cleared. Something approaching awareness filtered through the dull animal pain that filled him.
"Brooks,"
he moaned.
"Brooks, get it! Fuck, it hurts!"
Brooks knelt, laid a hand on the other man's shoulder. The acolyte thrashed away from the touch, screaming all over again.
"Fucking hell, that hurts!"
He flailed one arm, a deliberate gesture, Brooks guessed, an instruction trying to dig its way out past the roaring static of a million short-circuiting motor nerves. Brooks followed its path to a small, glass-fronted cabinet set into the wall. Lozenges of doped ceramic rested in neat, labeled rows behind the sliding pane. Happiness, orgasm, appetite suppressant, analgesic. He grabbed it off the shelf, dropped to Luckett's side, grabbed the fiber op at the cervical end, fumbled as fingers misheard brain. Luckett screamed again, arched his back like a drawn bow. The smell of shit filled the room. Brooks gripped the plug, twisted. The socket clicked free. Seething light flooded the walls, camera feeds, spline plots, deserts painted in garish blizzards of false color. Some tame oracle, deprived of direct access to Luckett's brain, continuing its conversation in meat space. Brooks jammed the painkiller home, click-twisted it into place. Luckett sagged instantly. His fingers continued to twitch and shiver, purely galvanic. For a moment, Brooks thought the acolyte had lost consciousness. Then Luckett took a great, heaving gulp of air, let it out again.
"That's better," he said.
Brooks eyed Luckett's trembling fingers, eyed his own. "It's not... this is...
not my department," Luckett coughed. "Not yours either, thank your lucky stars."
"But what is it? There's got to be a fix." He remembered. A rosette of monsters. The vampire at its heart, moving with frictionless efficiency through the dying fields. "Valerie," Luckett shook his head.
"She's on our side."
"But she's..."
"Not her."
Luckett turned his head, rested his eyes on an overhead real-time tactical of the surrounding desert. The monastery at the bullseye, a perimeter of arcane hieroglyphics around the edges.
"Them.
We've been making moves all day. What did you do? What did you do?"
"Do?"
Luckett coughed, wiped blood from his mouth with the back of his hand.
"You were here, my friend. We got noticed. And now we're reaping the whirlwind, you might say."
"They wouldn't just..." "Then again, why wouldn't they? Wasn't there some kind of ultimatum? Didn't they give us a chance to surrender, or..." The look Luckett gave him was an even mix of pity and amusement. Brooks cursed himself for an idiot. Headaches for most of the day before. Moore's aerosol delivery. But there'd been no artillery, no lethal canisters lobbed whistling across the desert. This thing had drifted in on the breeze, undetected, and not even engineered germs killed on contact. There was always an incubation period. It always took time for a few lucky spores to hatch out in the lungs and breed an army big enough to take down a human body. Even the magic of exponential growth took hours to manifest. The enemy,
"People like you," Liana had said,
must have set this plan in motion the moment they'd set up their perimeter. It wouldn't have mattered one good goddamn if the whole bicameral order had marched out across the desert with their hands in the air. The weapon was already in their blood, and it was blind to white flags.
"How could you let them do this?" Brooks hissed. "You're supposed to be smarter than us. You're post-fucking-singular. You're supposed to be 10 steps ahead of any plan we poor stupid cavemen could ever put together. How could you let them?"
"Oh, but this is all according to plan,"
Luckett patted him on the arm with one spastic, short-circuiting hand.
What plan?
Brooks choked back a hysterical giggle.
We're dead already. Even God can't plan for everything. Too many variables.
Luckett coughed again.
Not to worry, though. We planned for the things we couldn't plan for.
Faintly, through the open door, drifting down the corridor, through high, narrow windows, through barred gates, through glass panes looking into deserts and gardens, a whistling sound. Doppler shifted. The muffled thud of some nearby impact.
Ah, the mopping up begins.
Luckett nodded serenely.
No point being stealthy now, eh?
Brooks put his head in his hands.
Don't worry, old chap. It's not over yet. Not for you, anyway. Jim's lair. He's waiting for you.
Brooks raised his head.
Jim, but... I told you,
Luckett said.
According to plan.
Spasms rippled across his body.
Go!
And now Brooks heard another sound, a deeper sound, rumbling up the scale behind the hacking of the maimed and whistling shriek of inbound paralysis. He felt the vibration of great blades spinning up far down in the earth, heard the muffled hiss of steam injected into deep silos. He heard the growing drumbeat of an elemental monster straining against its chains. Now that, he said, is more fucking like it. Moore was in his bunker, but he wasn't running the show. No controls blinked on the smart paint. No sliders or dials or virtual buttons to press. The readouts were all one way. Somewhere else, the bicamerals were bringing their engine online. Moore was only watching from the bleachers. He turned at Brooks's approach.
They're dug in.
Doesn't matter, though, right? We're going to tear them to pieces. The soldier turned back to the wall and shook his head. What's the problem? They out of range?
We're not fighting.
Not fighting? Have you seen what they're doing to us?
I see.
Everyone's dead or halfway there.
We're not.
Right? Nerves sang ominously in Brooks's fingers. And how long is that going to last?
Long enough. This bug was customized for bicamerals. We've got more time.
Moore frowned.
You don't engineer something like that in the field. Not overnight. They've been planning this a while.
They didn't even fire a warning shot, for fuck's sake. They didn't even try to negotiate.
They're scared.
They're scared?
They'd assume that giving us any advance warning would put them at an unacceptable disadvantage. They don't know what we're capable of.
Then maybe it's time we showed them. Moore turned back to face the other man.
Perhaps you're not familiar with bicameral philosophy. It's predominantly nonviolent.
You and Luckett and all your friends can argue the philosophical subtleties of unilateral pacifism while we all turn into predominantly nonviolent corpses.
Friends. Is Liana? She's fine.
None of us are fine. Brooks turned back to the stairs. Maybe he could find her before the ceiling crashed in. Maybe there was some broom closet he could hide in. Moore's hand closed on his shoulder and spun him as though he were made of balsa.
We will not attack these people, he said calmly. We don't know if they're responsible.
You just said they'd been planning this, Brooks croaked. They were just waiting for some kind of excuse. You watched them lock and load. For all I know, you listened in on their fucking comm chatter. You heard them give the orders. You know.
Doesn't matter. Even if we were right there in their command center. Even if we could take their brains apart, synapse by synapse, and backtrace every neuron that went into the go-ahead, we would still not know.
Fuck you. I'm not going to suck your dick just because you trot out the old no free will shtick.
These people could have been used without their knowledge.
They could be slaved to an implanted agenda, and they'd swear they were making their own decisions the whole time. We will not kill cat's paws. They're not zombies, Moore. Whole different species. They're killing us. You're just going to have to trust me on this. Or,
Moore cocked his head, evidently amused,
we could leave you behind to hash it out with them personally.
Leave me.
We're getting out of here. Why do you think they're warming up the engine?
Someone had rolled a giant soccer ball into the compound. A dozen fallen monks twitched, wide-eyed and tetanic, around a geodesic sphere of interlocking padded pentagons, maybe 4 meters across at the equator. A door-sized polygon bent back from that surface like a snapped fingernail. Some kind of escape pod. No obvious means of propulsion. No onboard propulsion, anyway. But rising high above the walls of the enclosure, the funnel spun and roared like an angry jet engine. Brooks craned his neck in search of the top of the thing, and swallowed, and looked again. Something was scratching an arc across the sky.
Get in, Moore said at his elbow. We don't have much time.
Of course they know. They've got satellites. They've got micro-drones. They can look right past these walls and see what we're doing and just blow it all to shit.
Missile, he croaked.
The sky shattered where he was pointing. The contrail just stopped, high overhead, its descending arc amputated halfway to the jet stream. A new sun bloomed at its terminus, a blinding pinpoint, impossibly small and impossibly bright. Brooks wasn't sure what he really saw in the flash-blinded split second that followed. A great flickering hole opening in the morning sky. A massive piece of that dome peeled back as though God itself had popped the lid off its terrarium. The sky crinkled, wisps of high-flying cirrus cracking into myriad shards, expanses of deep and endless blue collapsing into sharp-edged facets. Half of heaven folded into lunatic origami. The sky imploded and left another sky behind, serene and unscarred. A thunderclap split Brooks's skull like an ice pick. The force of it lifted him off his feet, dangled him for an endless moment before dropping him back onto the grass. Something pushed him from behind. He turned. Moore's mouth was moving, but the only sound Brooks could hear was a high-pitched ringing that filled the world. Past Moore's shoulder, above the ramparts of the monastery, dark, smoldering wreckage fell from the sky like the charred bones of some giant stick man. Its empty skin fled sideways across the sky in ragged pieces, great streamers of tinsel drawn toward the shackled tornado. The vortex engine seemed to draw strength from the meal. It grew thicker somehow, faster, darker. Valerie's invisible airship. He'd forgotten. 100,000 cubic meters of hard vacuum directly in the path of the incoming missile, broken on impact, sucking cascades of desert air into the void. Moore pushed him toward the sphere. Brooks climbed unsteadily into darkness and the web of some monstrous spider. It was already full of victims, tangled, half-seen silhouettes, all hung cocooned in a mesh of broad, flat fibers stretching chaotically across the structure's interior.
Move!
A tiny, tinny voice growling through a chorus of tuning forks. Brooks grabbed a convenient band of webbing, gripped as tightly as the sparks in his hand would allow, pulled himself up. Something bumped the side of his head. He turned and recoiled at the face of one of Valerie's zombies, upside down, eyes jittering, hanging in the mesh like an entangled bat. Brooks yanked back his hand, the webbing stuck as though he were a gecko. He pulled free, clambered up and away from those frantic eyes, that lifeless face. Another face, not so dead, hung in the gloom behind its bodyguard.
Brooks, irises still clenched against the morning sun. Couldn't make out details, but he could feel it watching him. Could feel the predator grin behind the eyes. He kept moving. Sticky bands embraced at his touch, peeled gently free as he pulled away.
"Any empty spot?"
Moore said, climbing up in his wake. The ringing in Brooke's ears was fading at last, as if somehow absorbed by this obscene womb and its litter of freaks and monsters.
"Try to keep away from the walls. They're padded, but it's going to be a rough ride."
The hatch swung into place like the last piece of a jigsaw, sealed them in, and cut off the meager light filtering from outside. Instantly, the air grew dense and close, a small stagnant bubble at the bottom of the sea. Brooks swallowed. The darkness breathed around him with unseen mouths, a quiet, claustrophobic chorus muffled by air heavy as cement. Vision and ventilation returned within a breath of each other. A stale breeze across his cheek, a dim red glow from the padded facets of the wall itself. Bicamerals blocked the light on all sides, some spread-eagled, some balled up. A couple of pretzel silhouettes that spoke either of superhuman flexibility or broken bones. Maybe a dozen all told. A dozen monks. A prehistoric psychopath with an entourage of brain-dead killing machines. Two baseline humans. All hanging together in a giant, cobwebbed uterus, waiting for some unseen army to squash them flat. All part of the plan. Brooks tried to move, found that the webbing had tightened around him once he'd stopped climbing. He could wriggle like a hooked fish, bring his hand up far enough to scratch his nose. Beyond that, he wasn't going anywhere. His eyes were adapting to the long wave, at least. A face overhead resolved into welcome familiarity. "Liana? Liana, are you?" Only her body was here. Its fingers tapped the side of its head with the telltale rhythm of someone tuned to a more distant reality.
"It's okay," Moore spoke quietly from somewhere nearby. "She's talking to our ride."
"This is it? 20 people?" He gulped air, still strangely stale for all the efforts of the local life support system.
"It's enough."
Brooks could barely catch his breath. The whole compartment hissed with the sound of forced ventilation. Air washed across his face, and still he couldn't seem to fill his lungs. He fought rising panic. "I think there's something wrong with the air conditioner."
"The air's fine. Relax."
"No, it..." Something kicked them, hard in the side. Suddenly up was sideways. Suddenly sideways was down. Blood rushed to Brooks's head. A giant stood on his chest. The air, already unbearably close, got closer. The stench of rotten eggs flooded Brooks's sinuses like a tsunami.
"Jesus Christ," he thought.
He couldn't imagine a worse time or place for a fart. Under other circumstances, it might have been funny. Now it only made him gag, stole whatever meager oxygen had remained.
"Here we go,"
Moore murmured from behind, from below, from overhead. He sounded almost sleepy. The web slewed, bodies jerked in unison one way, slung like pendulums back the other. Flipped around some arbitrary, unknowable center of gravity. They seemed to be accelerating in 10 directions at once. Niagara roared in Brooks's head.
"Can't breathe."
"You're not supposed to. Go with it."
"What?"
"Isoflurane. Hydrogen sulfide."
Whirling static engulfed the world from the outside in. 20 bodies, barely visible through the maelstrom, threw themselves as one toward some unremarkable point on the far side of the compartment. They strained toward that point like iron filings drawn to a cyclotron. Their elastic shackles strained almost to the breaking point. "So," Brooks mused as his vision failed, "this is it. the final conscious experience. Enjoy it while it lasts.